Welcome to The Edge. I'm your host, Tom Smith. Why is American politics stuck in a two-party system? Does our method of voting have anything to do with that? Are there methods which would give minor parties an equal winning opportunity for their candidates? This week, our guest is Warren Smith, who's a mathematician. He got two Bachelor of Science degrees from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology and his PhD in Applied Mathematics from Princeton University. He has worked for Bell Laboratories, NEC Laboratories, and the Temple University Department of Mathematics. He is the founder of the Center for Range Voting, which was founded in August of this year, about 3 months ago. And he has written, not quite published yet, it's a book on voting, different voting methods. He's gotten endorsements for range voting from both the Libertarian and the Socialist 2004 presidential candidates. And, well, with that, I'd like to introduce Warren. Good morning.
Hello.
Where do we go from here? What is wrong with American politics, with American democracy?
Well, I think there's a lot wrong with American democracy, and a surprising fraction of what's wrong with American democracy just traces to the fact that we're using a bad voting system.
What is the voting system that we're using?
Well, the voting system we're using is called plurality voting. So your vote is just the name of a candidate, and whoever gets named the most wins. So it sounds simple. In fact, it is simple. It's one of the simplest voting systems. But when you think about it, it's a really bad voting system.
So we can only vote for one person. We can't vote for anyone else, just one.
Yeah, so by just naming one person, you're giving the minimum possible amount of information that you could possibly give.
Yeah.
I mean, well, giving some information. I mean, for example, you could give a little more information if you said, you know, I like Bush the best, but, you know, I like Nader the second best. That would be more information.
Yeah.
In fact, just about anything you could do would be more information than just naming one person. So that's one problem. But let's just get back to U.S. democracy instead of just the voting system and compare our democracy with other countries. Well, for one thing, if you look at the 600 top positions in our government, how many of them are members of a third party?
Pretty close to none.
There's actually two of them that are call themselves independents, but there's zero out of the 600 who are members of a third party.
Yeah.
So every other democracy in the world, you know, there's plenty of parties besides just two.
Yeah.
So what's different with us?
Yeah.
And then is this bad that we've only got two parties completely dominating? Well, probably is bad. For example, consider the Iraq War we're in now.
Yes.
Well, every third party was against it.
Uh-huh.
Libertarians, socialists, Greens, Constitutional Party, they were all against the Iraq War.
Yep.
From every spectrum. But both of the major party candidates, Bush and Kerry, I mean, Kerry voted for the war, and Bush started the war, right? So if you're a voter and you're against the war, which according to the latest polls, it looks like the majority of voters are against the war, well, you're stuck.
Yeah.
I mean, you could vote for nobody except for the major party candidates, and they were both pro-war. So
yes.
you had nowhere to go. What kind of democracy is it where we really don't have a choice?
Yeah, same thing for the Patriot Act. It was a quote-unquote bipartisan effort. Both parties heavily supported this very clearly, blatantly unconstitutional, human rights infringing law. And the minor parties, as far as I know, all the minor parties opposed it.
Well, you're right. All the minor parties, you know, Socialists, Libertarians, Greens, they all opposed the Patriot Act. And, you know, the major parties, Kerry voted for it.
Yep.
So, again, no choice. I mean, I could name more examples. How about the WTO and NAFTA? Both of the major party candidates supported it. All the minor parties were against it.
Yep.
And go back in time a little. How about the Vietnam War?
Yep.
What happened in the Vietnam War was, by, I think, about 1967, polls show the American public decided it was bad. They wanted to get out of the war, 1967. But the major party candidates, who were Nixon and Humphrey in the 68 election, were basically both pro-war. Humphrey was associated with Johnson and Kennedy, who started the war, and you know, Nixon kept the war going when he got elected for, what, like 4 or 5 more years.
Yeah, mostly on a covert type level with special operations people, but yeah, he still did. That's still a war.
Covert, I mean, massive bombing.
Yeah,
I think most of the casualties actually occurred under Nixon.
Yeah.
So, thing is, if the American public had had a way to get what it wanted in 1967, the war would have ended 5 years earlier.
Yeah.
I don't know, a million lives would have been saved, maybe.
Yeah.
But they didn't have a way to do that because both the major party candidates are pro-war. So we're definitely being hurt by lack of choice, lack of democracy. We've only got two choices, and sometimes we've really got only got one choice because they're the same. Or there's one-party domination. So remember I said 600 of the top, the 600 top seats in the government are two parties. But how about one-party domination? It turns out that 98% of the elections for things like congressmen and governors and senators are predictable a year ahead of time. 98% predictability.
Hmm.
So, I mean, that means you've got like 2% choice.
Yeah.
So, and you go to like India, I think it's less than 50% predictability.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, but Warren, you see, if that is true, and I have to agree with you on that. If that's true, doesn't that kind of open the door to strategic nomination? I mean, you can put in the guy, you can put, if you got two parties, you can put in the guy you want to most of the time, right?
Well, who's you?
I mean, I'm talking about the people with money, somebody who has the power to do so, the wherewithal to finance a candidate and put them in office there.
Well, money certainly has a lot to do with that 98% predictability.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a 98% re-election rate in Congress,
and
that's caused... I mean, why does that happen? Well, one reason is we don't know. A lot of reasons include if they're running for re-election, first of all, they have the advantage that they've done it before. They've got experience. Second of all, they've got more money.
Yeah.
Third of all, everybody knows they're going to win. So what happens is the heavy money donors decide to donate to the person who's going to win and who's already in office, because that way their money can influence them when they're already in office.
Yes.
Wink, wink.
Yeah.
So that gives them a big advantage. And also they've gerrymandered everything.
Yeah.
So that gives them a big advantage. So it's a mixture of all these things.
Yes.
But compare with other democracies. There's plenty of democracies with more than two parties, with less predictability. Everybody has less predictability than 98%, except us.
Yeah.
And less gerrymandering. In fact, Canada is excellent when it comes to gerrymandering. They've got all their districts basically look like rectangles and things. They're clearly not gerrymandered.
Yep.
If you look at a map of Illinois or Arizona, they've got these incredibly gerrymandered districts that look like diseased octopuses.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so you founded the Center for Range Voting. Tell our listeners what range voting is.
Okay, so range voting is an example of a better voting system. So it's pretty simple. You've seen it on TV at the Olympics. So what you do in the Olympics is each gymnast, you give them a score from 0 to 10. You've seen those judges holding up those cards at 8.5.
Yes. Yep.
So the election analog is every person like Kerry, Gore, Bush, whatever, you give them a score from 0 to 10. And notice you're scoring every candidate. You're giving information on every candidate, not just one, giving you much more information in your vote.
Uh-huh.
And not only is it more information because it's every candidate, it's more information because it's a number rather than just yes or no.
Yeah.
So, so then you take all those numbers, and whoever has the highest average score wins, just like in the Olympics. The gymnast with an average score of, you know, 9.5 is beating the gymnast with 6.2.
So each candidate is rated.
So you're rating the candidate as your vote.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty simple, but actually it's simpler than you think, because it turns out you can run this on every voting machine in the USA right now without modification.
Hmm.
I mean, it sounds like you can't, because the voting machines are designed for just name one candidate, but actually you can, basically because there's a transformation that turns a range election into sort of artificial fake plurality elections. But you as a voter don't have to know that. All you do is you push a button from, say, 0 to 9 on Kerry, and then you push a button from, push one of 10 buttons from 0 to 9 for Bush, and
mm-hmm.
so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So as a voter, it's pretty easy. Or
well,
even buttons, it's like optical scan, and you're filling in a little... one of those little SAT blobs with your pencil from zero, one of either the 0 or the one or the nine slot for Kerry, right?
Yeah, but that's on a mechanical type voting system. You could actually have on a computerized voting system, you could have install any software you want, and you could actually do a straight range vote. You wouldn't have to transform anything. I've seen range voting used in restaurants. Like they'll have a card. How well did we do? And it'll rate the food and the service like 0 to 5, where 5 is excellent and 0 is very poor. And then you have the different ratings in between. So I think a lot of folks are familiar with range voting. They just don't know that rating system, the numerical rating system, is range voting.
Yeah, I've seen it also in those internet movie review things.
Yes.
And so I think they work excellently. In fact, why do you think they use it in the Olympics? Because if they were to use plurality voting in the Olympics, like say every judge, all the judge could do is just name one gymnast, then you've got to shut up.
Yep.
Well, I mean, it'd be a joke. Yeah. I mean, people already say the Olympics scoring is a bit of a joke, but that would be a total joke, and everybody would know it, and nobody would watch it, so it just wouldn't have been good enough for the Olympics. They've got money at stake. They've got television viewers. So they've got to have a good voting system. So why can't our government have a good voting system? Well, it obviously doesn't seem to matter as much to our government as to the Olympics.
Yeah. Now, different voting systems meet and fail different criteria. Could you tell us about range voting, what criteria that it satisfies?
Well, one important criterion is the so-called favorite betrayal criterion.
Yes.
So, well, that's about voting honestly for your favorite candidate, top. So suppose, for example, your favorite candidate is Ralph Nader. Okay, fine. So right now, in the current system, if you vote for Nader, everybody regards you as a fool. Because, you know, Nader has no chance to win, so your vote's just wasted. And furthermore, the most Nader-like among the two major party candidates is being denied your vote.
Yeah.
So by voting for Nader in the current system, you're actually making Nader lose, and you're making your favorite of the major party candidate lose. You're making them both lose. It's counterproductive. You're actually hurting your cause mm-hmm. by voting honestly what you feel. So then all these Nader voters were urged, oh, don't be a fool and vote Nader. Vote for, you know, Gore or Bush or whoever.
Yeah.
Okay, fine, so then they can do that, but then they're being dishonest, and they're depriving Nader of any recognition and chance.
Yeah.
And that just kills off candidates like Nader. And similarly, every third-party candidate just gets killed off.
Yes.
And that's the root cause of why our government is so two-party dominated.
Yes.
Is it's foolish to vote for third parties, and so they get fewer votes than they deserve, and over 100 years, that just kills them off.
Yeah.
Okay, so now let's check out range voting. You want to vote for Nader? Fine. Give Nader the maximum score, 10.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so is this hurting Gore or Bush?
Nope.
No, because you could also give one of them a 10.
Yeah.
If you wanted. I mean, it's a completely independent decision. It's like measuring the temperature. If you measure the temperature of Nader and he's hot, that doesn't affect the temperature of Gore or Bush. That's a completely independent temperature.
Yeah.
So, there's no reason not to vote for your favorite candidate, and so that way everybody's not only giving much more information, it's also much more honest information.
Okay, so plurality voting does not satisfy the favorite betrayal criterion, correct?
Betray your favorite, who might be Nader in this example,
yep.
Because that's strategically wise. Or you vote for your favorite, and then you're hurting yourself
yep.
and your cause by making everybody you like lose.
Okay. Now, there's another voting system which has been proposed. It's actually used in Ireland. It's used in Australia. It's called instant runoff voting. Now, does instant runoff voting satisfy the favorite betrayal criterion?
No.
Okay.
So, instant runoff voting. A lot of U.S. third parties have gotten the idea that instant runoff voting will solve their problems.
Yeah.
But they're mistaken.
Yep.
So I'd like them to learn this. So the Green Party has actually endorsed instant runoff voting, which is a big mistake, because it's just going to lead to two-party domination, just like we've already got.
Yeah, because, and you, what we're
one of the reasons
at,
is it doesn't satisfy the favorite betrayal criterion. It can still be
yeah.
bad,
yeah.
instant runoff voting, to vote Nader top, because that can still, you can still give example elections where that causes both Nader and the most Nader-like major party guy to both lose, whereas if you dishonestly voted the major party guy top, then he would win.
Yeah.
So if that happens enough, Nader is still going to get nowhere, and the two-party system is still going to reign. And it turns out that every instant runoff country, Australia, Ireland, Malta, all of them are two-party dominated.
Yeah.
So
IRV does not solve the two-party dominated problem.
Yeah, and also it isn't okay for voting machines. Most of the voting machines in the United States will not accept instant runoff voting, and if you wanted to switch, you'd have to change most of the voting machines, unlike range voting, where every voting machine accepts it.
Yeah.
I mean, somewhat conveniently the others, but they all do it. So it's much harder to switch to instant runoff voting, and it's a much more complicated system. For instance, they adopted instant runoff voting in San Francisco for the 2004 elections, and they had a huge screw-up. Every non-obvious election result in San Francisco, the software died, and then they had to wait several weeks to finally get the results.
Yeah.
So that wasn't so good.
Now, instant runoff voting has some other criteria failures which actually reflect rather badly on this system. Now, one of them is called monotonicity. Please explain monotonicity.
Okay. I pronounce it monotonicity. But the idea is if you increase your vote for somebody, that should increase their chances of winning, or at least not decrease their chances of winning.
Correct.
So that's monotonicity. So it sounds like something obviously everything's going to obey, but it's not true of instant runoff voting. You can actually increase your vote for, say, Nader or anybody, and that act of increasing your vote will actually cause Nader to lose.
Yeah.
All kinds of strange phenomena can happen in instant runoff voting. And it turns out that in a mathematical model of random elections, non-monotonic range voting elections happen at least 1% of the time.
Yeah.
So is that enough of a problem that you're worried? I don't know. I'll tell you that the United Kingdom's House of Commons had 659 members. So if they're all elected with instant runoff voting and 1% non-monotonic elections, that means that 7 members of the House of Commons every time would be elected in such a way that the loser could say, look, if only somebody had increased their vote for my opponent, I would have won.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm the real winner. And so then, if that happened, there'd be all kinds of complaining that it's an unjust voting system.
Yeah. Now, it also fails. It also fails a participation criterion. Explain to our listeners what the participation criterion is.
That's actually pretty similar to monotonicity. You want your voting system to have the property that if you show up at the polling booth and cast your honest vote,
yeah,
that can't hurt you. That's not going to cause your favorite candidates to be more likely to lose.
Yeah.
It's going to hopefully cause them to be more likely to win. I mean, why else are you voting?
Right.
Well, it turns out with instant runoff voting and also with so-called Condorcet voting systems, it can actually fail this. You casting your honest vote can hurt your favorite candidates.
Yeah.
And whereas with range voting, if you cast an honest vote, it never hurts you.
Yeah. It always helps your. It will help the candidates who you support.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's another advantage of range voting. So range voting is simpler. It's monotonic. Honestly, voting can't hurt you. Favorite betrayal criterion is okay. Runs on every voting machine. So it's looking good.
All right.
And actually, the best thing is that we did a giant computer simulation of different voting systems. So maybe that's too complicated to describe, but suffice it to say that range voting came out of the best in our comparative computer simulation study of about 30 voting systems we tried.
What is your criteria for best? Please put it in non-mathematical terms for our listeners.
Well, we have a yardstick called Bayesian regret, and what it is basically avoidable human unhappiness caused by the election result. So we want to minimize avoidable human unhappiness. So, for example, Bush wins, and Gore really should have won, and then Bush causes all kinds of unhappiness, that's Bayesian regret.
Yeah.
All right. So in a computer simulation study, you can set up these fake voters and fake candidates, and each candidate causes a certain amount of happiness or unhappiness to every voter, which is just a number. And so you can play all these games inside your computer, and you have your fake voters vote for the fake candidates using your favorite voting system and using whatever notions of how happy they'd be as sort of input to their thinking about how they're going to vote.
Okay.
And just see what happens and who gets elected. And sometimes the best candidate who makes everybody happiest gets elected.
Yeah.
Sometimes, because the voting system is not very good, like our system, if Nader was really the favorite candidate of everybody,
yeah,
well, he still wouldn't have been elected. So that would have been Bayesian regret.
Yes.
All right, so our computer, if it were simulating that kind of election, would see that. It would add on a little more to its Bayesian regret score for plurality voting. So anyway, what happens is the most human happiness on average comes from range voting in our experiments.
Interesting.
And it's actually a very big improvement. So perhaps I can make this less abstract.
No, you're doing fine. You're doing fine.
...of democracy in the first place. Right? So before we had democracy, what do we have? We have things like monarchy, warlords. Okay, so just view that as just a random candidate wins. Because what happens is it's a lottery of birth, right? You're born the king. And so it's a random guy wins, and he's the king. So I'm saying that because our computer study actually had as one of its voting systems random winner. I mean, we just ignore whatever votes they put in. We just select a random candidate, and he's the winner. And so that's one human happiness score. Then let's invent democracy. So democracy is you do plurality voting. Everybody names their favorite candidate. The most named guy wins. So that's better. In fact, our computer study shows that that's better than random winner. So democracy works. There's an improvement in human happiness on average.
Okay.
Good. So now let's do range voting, and then it turns out you get a better improvement in human happiness over democracy as we've got it now.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that the improvement from monarchy to democracy is comparable to the improvement from democracy now to range voting.
Interesting.
So actually, just getting range voting, according to my numbers, would improve human happiness by as much as the entire invention of democracy improved human happiness.
Where does instant runoff voting fall in relation to Bayesian regret?
Where does it fall? Let's see.
You had that somewhere on your website.
Well, it's worse than range voting, and...
Actually, I saw it on another website. Someone else had done a Bayesian regret calculations. This was not on your... It wasn't on the range voting website. There was another... It was a paper that I had read, and they surveyed, I think it was, if I'm not mistaken, 10 or 12 different voting systems, and IRV was above plurality, but it was way below range voting, and actually there's other voting systems that it was below as far as Bayesian regret goes.
Yeah, okay, so here I've managed to get this on the screen.
Okay.
So on one experiment where we had 5 candidates, 20 voters, and random numbers as happiness values, whatever. Anyway, elect random winner had Bayesian regret 15 on this scale. So that's like monarchy.
Okay.
So then if we go to plurality with strategic voters, not honest voters but who vote Nader, but strategic voters who vote Gore and Bush,
yeah.
then 15 gets reduced to 9.
Hmm.
So that's the unhappiness value has been reduced. Okay, good. But then if we go to instant runoff, well, actually, instant runoff is coming out the same as plurality with strategic voters, but if you go to instant runoff with honest voters, it's down to 3.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's a pretty big reduction, but actually plurality with honest voters would have been 5.
Okay.
All right, but then if we go to range voting with honest voters, it's down to 0.5.
Wow.
So it's like 10 times better. And if we go to range voting with strategic voters, it's 3, which is the same as instant runoff, actually slightly better than instant runoff with honest voters.
Yeah.
So that's a typical experiment. Let's see. 15 to 9 to 0.5 is a kind of monarchy to democracy to range voting.
Mm-hmm.
So big reduction.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I mean, if you think about it, it's just outrageous that we've got this non-democratic system. I mean, it's considered, at least you're taught in school, that democracy is so important, it was worth fighting all these wars and revolutions to get it. But we could get the same improvement by switching to range voting and hopefully without any wars, just make a switch. We could just do it for the next election.
The Center for Range Voting. I will give you their website here. This is actually, it's up at the Temple University website right now. It's going to be shortly changed over to a separate website, but there will be a redirect there. It's http://math.temple.edu/, there's a little curly sign there, WDS/CRV.
And WDS is Warren D. Smith, that's me, and CRV is Center for Range Voting.
Yeah, what's that little sign that's before the WDS? It's like a little curly sign.
We mathematicians say it's an asymptotic sign. I don't know if that helps you.
No, it doesn't help us. But it's a little curly sign, which is up in the left top corner of your keyboard. You can find it there. Okay. There are other vulnerabilities to election methods, one of which is called clone, but it really pertains to similar candidates, the susceptibility towards similar candidates getting elected in a voting method. So tell us about that.
Cloning is not about those Korean scientists in Star Wars. It's about similar candidates in the voting world. So suppose you have a bunch of candidates, such as, say, Gore is a candidate, and then some other candidate comes along and enters the race who's just like Gore, you know, Gore Prime, Gore 2, and then maybe another candidate, Gore 3, comes along, and they're all very similar to Gore. Well, what's going to happen? What's going to happen is all the Gore clones are going to split the vote, and they'll all lose. But it might be that the whole reason that all these clones were coming was that Gore, or whoever it was just a very popular candidate with the best ideas.
Yeah.
So all these clones came along because his ideas were so good, came along with slight variations of those views. So what can happen is the best candidates can get cloned, then they split the vote and they all lose, and then some bad candidate gets elected. And this happens all the time.
In plurality voting.
Yeah, and some other voting systems have the opposite problem. You can actually help yourself by introducing clones.
It's called teaming.
So, I mean, that's also bad. You don't want the election to be manipulable.
Yeah.
And in fact, the Republicans and the Democrats were aware of this. And there were these accusations that certain Republicans were actually funding Nader, who was viewed as a Gore clone, or at least enough of a Gore clone, because they'd hoped he'd split Gore's votes. And this is crazy, because, I mean, the accusation was they're supporting somebody who's ideologically opposed to them, purely as a matter of strategy. And the same thing happened when Gray Davis got elected in California. Remember, he got elected and then recalled, and Schwarzenegger won the recall election.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, when Gray Davis ran in his original election, he actually supported one of his Republican opponents in the Republican primary, because he wanted this Republican A to win and not Republican B, whom he thought would have a better chance against him. So he started running ads against Republican B and supporting Republican A, which worked. And then Gray Davis won the election, although there are many people who thought, you know, really, Gray Davis should have lost the election to Republican A, who never got into the election.
Yeah.
So all these crazy things happen in our current voting system. Range voting doesn't happen. If there's clones running, doesn't matter. You can give all the clones a high score, all the clones a low score. It in no way helps a candidate to have clones, and it in no way hurts a candidate to have clones.
Yeah, and you don't have the voting, so you don't get the teaming or the vote splitting problems.
Yeah, and you don't get the manipulability problems where parties can artificially sponsor clones of the other candidate, another crazy phenomena.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just ridiculous.
Yes.
It should be about what voters want, not who can play the most Machiavellian games. And another way to look at this cloning is rivalry. I was trying to sell range voting to the Socialist Party. So it turns out that although socialists used to be comparatively popular in this country, they've now declined, and there's hardly any left. And what's left of them is split into several battling socialist parties. It's really weird.
I think some would argue that the Republicans and Democrats have become largely socialist. But that's a different kettle of fish. Go ahead. Yeah.
The socialists would not, believe me. They think the Republicans and the Democrats are the Antichrist. Anyway, the trouble is, from their point of view, they have no chance. And what makes it even worse is they're split. There's the Socialist Party of the USA, there's the Workers' World Party, there's the Democratic Socialists of America, there's Socialist Workers Party. They're split, and they all hate each other, even though they're really quite similar if you look at their platforms and things.
Yeah.
And I think what's happening is these parties, not only are they third parties that have no chance because they're third parties, but they start getting split, and then they start battling with each other for that smaller and smaller share of the vote pie, and then they hate each other.
Yeah.
And that's crazy. They should really be allies because they're really very similar.
Yeah.
And if there's no cloning in the voting system, it isn't a problem. All those little socialist parties could be allies, and they wouldn't have to hate each other, and maybe they'd unify, and everybody would be a happy family again. I mean, maybe not, but there's at least that hope. And the same thing was going on with the Green Party in the last election. According to a lot of Green Party insiders I've talked to, there was a Democratic Party plot to split up the Green Party and make sure that whatever they did, they didn't nominate Nader, because the Democrats were afraid of Nader.
Yeah.
So they succeeded. They got the Green Party to nominate Cobb, Nader off from the Green Party. So then it was effectively sort of two Green Party rivals.
Yeah.
So it's divide and conquer, and it's crazy.
Yeah. Well, you're right about that. Whoever the insider was, they were spot on, because there is, I had attended, as an observer, some Green Party informal meetings, and they had some Democratic Party infiltrators there who were pushing up the Democratic Party and trying to spot people who could be disaffected and that kind of thing. It's interesting, dirty politics, but let's go on.
Oh, I should talk about how well it actually works.
Okay.
Yeah, so we did a study of how well it actually works in the 2004 election as an exit poll. So we had me and several other pollsters sort of sitting outside polling place, and as the voters would come out, we'd have them fill out a range ballot saying, what would you do if this were a range voting election, voting for president in the 2004 election? We just wanted to find out what would happen.
Yep.
So what happened? What happened was spectacular.
Did you compare the results of your straw poll there to the actual results
Absolutely.
Of that precinct?
Yes. Well, we had multiple precincts.
Okay.
It was actually a few places in New York State and in suburbs of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
But, and actually, New York State and Philadelphia were somewhat different from the country as a whole because Kerry won in New York and Pennsylvania, but not in the country as a whole. But those differences were comparatively minor compared to the differences we're going to talk about, so don't worry about it.
Okay.
So what's the official results? With the plurality voting system. The official results were Bush won with 50.7%, Kerry 48.3%, and then there's all these third-party candidates who in total got less than 1%. Shows you the massive domination we've got with the current system.
Yeah.
Parties. Less than 1% for all the third-party guys combined.
And that's on the plurality ballot. Now, how did they fare on the range voting ballot?
So range voting, at least in New York and Pennsylvania, which were a little different, it came out Bush with 40, Kerry with 55. We're having Kerry win, which is probably because we're in New York State.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's roughly pretty similar. But remember, in range voting, the numbers do not have to add up to 100, because in range voting, you could give everybody a 99 if you want it as your vote.
So how did the minor parties fare?
So now let's go on Nader, 25. So Nader, 25 versus Bush, 40. Bush is, of course, doing better than Nader, but, you know, not by tremendously much, whereas in the official results, it was Bush 51, Nader 0.38.
Yeah.
So Nader improved by a factor of 83 versus Bush.
Wow.
When we switched to range voting. So then you see that there's this tremendous distortion going on.
Yes.
Nader voters are afraid to vote Nader with the current system. And even voters who maybe don't think Nader's the best, but would still be willing to give him a pretty good score, they also contribute to the range voting total for Nader. So then the total result is a huge improvement. Nader's getting 83 times more votes versus Bush with range voting.
Yeah.
And that shows the tremendous distortion we've got. How can Nader have any chance when he's got this, you know, factor 83 hit? No third-party candidate has any chance when they've got to suffer a factor of 80, factor 50. No matter what they do, they're getting 50 times less votes than they should. They have no chance. So let's do Badnarik, the Libertarian candidate. Official results, 0.32%.
Yeah.
Range voting, 9%.
That's
factor of
30?
What?
Almost 30?
30 or so. All right. Cobb, 0.10%. That's a thousandth of the vote is the official result. But 5% with range voting, that's a factor of 50 more for Cobb.
Yep.
He was the Green Party candidate.
Yep.
How about Perutka, the Constitution Party candidate? Also 50 times improvement with range voting.
Okay, so range voting gives minor parties
a more honest
winning opportunity towards whatever office they're running for.
Well, as you can see, they wouldn't have won with range voting, but they would have gotten a lot more honest reflection of what the U.S. public feels about them.
And that still is important.
I don't think that only a thousandth of the U.S. public really supports the Green point of view. I don't think that's realistic.
Yeah.
And so our range voting says 5%.
Yeah.
I think that's more realistic of how much support the Green Party has.
Yes.
And similar, I mean, you can go down the list. How about socialists? Well, I don't believe that socialists are really, I mean, my God, they got about a 30,000th of the votes. Now, okay, I don't think socialists should be dominating, but I believe that they have more than a 30,000th of the population supporting socialist ideas.
Yeah.
I mean, heck, in Spain, the socialists just won the election, and they're in charge, right? How can Spain be that incredibly different from the U.S.? So anyway, the socialists would have gotten like 4% or something with range voting, which is a thousand times better.
Well, the point here is that the support for minor parties is honestly reflected by range voting, whereas in plurality voting or an instant runoff or an instant runoff voting, it's very much distorted. And the votes on plurality voting are split, and in instant runoff voting, they're transferred to another candidate, usually one of the two majors.
Yeah, and that hurts our country because I think third parties have a lot of good ideas that are being shut out, like all the third-party candidates were against the Iraq War, and they were totally shut out because both the major party candidates voted for the war. So on and on it goes. And I could name things that are even worse. Some issues just aren't even being considered by our governments.
Yeah.
Well, here's one that I consider important, but our government completely ignores. Antibiotics in animal feed.
Yeah.
They're putting antibiotics by the ton into feeds for cows and pigs and so forth.
Yeah.
Because it slightly increases the growth rate of the cows and the pigs.
Yeah, and they also justify it as used as prophylaxis against infections. But what it does is it kills off the weaker bacteria. The stronger bacteria survive. And now you got more virulent infections.
Well,
in
antibiotic resistance develops in the bacteria.
Yep.
So we're laying ourselves open by just putting massive amounts of antibiotics into animal feed.
Yep.
We're laying ourselves open to some massive pandemic of drug-resistant bacteria that we just can't cure.
Yeah.
And antibiotic resistance development has been noticed since Fleming discovered penicillin in the 30s.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, you can't get antibiotics without a prescription, and it's tightly regulated.
Yeah.
So that's designed to protect us from bacteria developing resistance, and it's all very fine and good, but then we just say, oh, we're just going to put tons and tons with no prescription in every animal feed.
Yeah.
And if you read this book, Guns, Germs, and Steel by Jared Diamond, he's describing how lots and lots of human diseases actually came from farm animals.
Yeah.
Well, it's like a cost-benefit analysis. The cost is possible huge pandemic of untreatable plague, and the benefit is slightly faster growth of farm animals. So I don't think it's worth it. But our politicians simply do not consider this issue. Every medical association says this is a very bad idea, it should be banned. U.S. government, corporate domination by agribusiness and drug companies, they don't even consider it.
Yeah.
Now, if you had a political system where other points of view could at least be heard, because right now it's not just that the third parties can't get elected, they can't even be heard because the media shuts them out.
Yes.
Media never covers the third party candidates because they're not going to win, so why should we cover them? So just whole points of view just get shut out. I think it's a disaster, and it could lead to a disaster in terms of, you know, like the end of civilization with an enormous plague.
Yeah.
Is one possible risk we're facing caused by the voting system.
Yeah.
So you can see how this, the voting system actually affects everything.
Yeah. No, you're right.
Okay, I guess I'm ranting a little hard here.
Well, that's okay. You can stay on your soapbox here. That's what this program's about. Now, as far as range voting being implemented, now, we know that you can write software, you can write any voting system software for any computerized voting system, but for more mechanical type systems or for punch card type systems, you can use range voting as well. It's easily adaptable for that.
It works on non-computerized dumb machines like levers and optical scan that can't be programmed or can't be reprogrammed.
Yeah.
So that's an advantage of range voting. Now, what we should talk about, is this just a pipe dream, or is there a way we can actually get range voting to happen?
Mm-hmm.
So I think there is a way. And our strategy at the Center for Range Voting is to try to get the Democrats and Republicans to actually want range voting, at least somewhere.
Yeah.
So you might say the Democrats and Republicans aren't going to want range voting. It's going to give the third parties a bigger chance. And they've got a cushy setup with 98% reelection rate. They don't have to worry. They've got millions of dollars coming in from corporate donors. Why should we change?
Yeah.
Well, there are places where they want to change, and we think the Iowa caucuses in 2008 are a place.
Yeah.
So let's think about Iowa. Okay. So Iowa is the first state to do the voting in the primaries in these caucuses, right? They have a huge influence on who gets elected as president. So, for instance, last time, Iowa chose Bush, and sure enough, he got elected president. And Iowa chose Kerry, who sure enough got to be the Democratic nominee for president.
Yeah.
Okay. And so those were in the Republican and Democratic caucuses in Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
Now suppose that the Democrats in Iowa, say, run their caucuses with range voting. Well, how's this going to hurt them, and how's this going to help them?
Mm-hmm.
I don't see that it hurts them at all. It's not like there's some Democratic office holder who's going to be vulnerable. There is no office holder. This is a primary. They're just selecting their own presidential nominee.
Yeah.
And they're going to have about 10 Democrats and 10 Republicans running in the next caucus.
Yeah.
And so in situations with 10 candidates, plurality voting really does badly because there's so little information you're giving in your vote, and it's so dominated by strategy.
Yes.
So, for example, in the last caucuses, the Iowans selected Bush first place, second place was Steve Forbes, third place was Alan Keyes, and fourth place, or maybe even worse than fourth place, was John McCain. So that was using plurality voting. So let's think about that. Okay, Bush is somewhat understandable coming in first place. But now what about Steve Forbes and Alan Keyes? These guys have never held office before.
Yeah.
Every election they've ever run in, up to the present day, they lost. And these guys came in second and third in the Iowa Republican caucuses. And now McCain, who was fourth or below, somewhere, he had like 9% or worse. It was really low.
Yeah.
Where was McCain? Nowhere. Well, McCain, war hero, longtime senator, has a lot of experience and reputation. And more to the point, in nationwide polls, McCain actually had more popularity than Bush and more popularity than Gore.
Yeah.
Anyway, it looked from the polls like McCain was the most popular choice,
yeah,
more than Bush and more than the Democrat.
Yeah.
But he got killed by Iowa, and he went nowhere, and Bush won, and so McCain was out of the race. Now, I'm not sure that this really made sense. It looks like McCain might have been a better president than Bush. Well, I mean, I can only guess, but McCain had experience in Vietnam War. He was a torture victim. He's known to be big on budget balance. So Bush's big problems during his administration were the war and the budget balance and this torture scandal. McCain plausibly would have done better on all those things,
yeah,
but he didn't have a chance because of Iowa. So why did Iowa act this way? Well, for one thing, McCain didn't campaign in Iowa. I mean, he campaigned in other places, and everybody had heard of him, and he was on the ballot, but he didn't actually go to Iowa and campaign.
Yeah.
So then I think the Iowans figured, well, look, since McCain didn't come here and campaign, that probably means he's not going to have a chance. So why should I waste my vote on somebody like Nader or McCain who's not going to have a chance?
Yeah.
I have to use my vote to select the two guys who are most likely to have a chance, which were Bush and Forbes, who had the most money and did the most campaigning.
Yeah. Yeah.
They all decided strategically, I'm going to vote for either Bush or Forbes, even if McCain was their favorite, because they didn't want to waste their vote. So
yeah.
I think that's the reason. So there may have been a huge distortion which caused America to be hurt, Republicans to be hurt, because Bush actually was less popular, and Bush actually lost the election to Gore in terms of a popular vote. McCain probably would have won. So the Republicans are worse off, the America was worse off. It's just, so if they'd done it with range voting, probably McCain would have done a lot better, because it doesn't matter. With range voting, you can give your honest opinion of McCain. You don't have to worry about this strategy.
Yeah,
well, in fact, he didn't campaign.
Yeah, well, Alan Keyes,
anyway.
Alan Keyes may have done better, too. All these other candidates may have done better as well. But, you know, I think a good solution to this, and this is something that I was involved with in Florida back in 1997 and 1998, and that was called Revision 11, where it put all political parties – now, not as far as voting system goes, but as far as qualifications for the ballot, put them all on a level playing field. And what we did, we got all the minor parties, I'll say most of the minor parties, behind this particular initiative, and as a minority group, as a minority of people politically, we got it to pass. And I think if minor parties were to get behind one voting method rather than one party support one method, one party support another method, well, that's fine and good, but they should all agree on a method. If they were to get behind range voting and get it on the ballot and push that through, I think they could get it through state by state, so that we would be using range voting to elect our candidates in a state-by-state basis. And
they've certainly got the incentive, because as I said, they get over 50 times more votes in our exit poll, every third party. So they've got the incentive, and they've got the total numbers, about a million votes last election for third-party candidates put together, which maybe is not a lot, but it seems like it's enough to get things on ballots.
Yeah. Well, Warren, we are running out of time, so I got to wrap things up real quick here. I appreciate your being on the program today. We were interviewing Warren D. Smith, who is a PhD mathematician who founded in August of this year the Center for Range Voting. And Warren, I'd like to have you back again in the future. So that's it for this week's The Edge. I'm your host and producer, Tom Smith. We'll be back again next week with another interesting guest. Bye-bye.